On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina.
So the other side of this now, this is where we start getting into the fun stuff. So I see you Zyrtra squatting on Instagram. I see you throwing weighted balls. You talk about trying to throw 100. Let's talk about skill acquisition, training, yourself, players, differences, similarities, your time at Driveline, your time in college. Like, I want to just open up the floor about training, throwing, and how the two really connect. So where do we start with that? I'll let you decide. If you want to talk about your own stuff, if you want to talk about other players, if you want to talk about Driveline, you open the floor and we'll run from there.
Yeah, so I graduated college in 2019. And at that point, I had plans to try and go play some indie ball. I had the job offer as the grad assistant at Coastal Carolina, and I kind of thought that was too good of a, opportunity to pass up, especially for the career I was wanting to pursue. So I told myself, hey, like, we'll move to Conway. I'll work there and I'm going to continue training. And, if I get good enough, I'll go sign. Ended up moving out the Driveline about 2 months into that. And I was like, oh, wow, this is perfect. I'm at one of the best pitching, facilities in the world. So I knew some of the trainers going in there. I'd actually trained there when I was an athlete in college. I kept in touch with some of the trainers. So we had Rob Hill, who's now with the LA Dodgers as the director of pitching. And then Sammy Lizarraga, who's a former Vanderbilt assistant pitching coach. But they were two of my friends there when I got there. And I would just bug the absolute crap out of them about, like, hey, man, how do I throw 95? And they would like make me figure out that myself. And like, I would get so frustrated at the time, but like now I can look back and see, like, instead of just telling me the answer, like they made me figure it out myself. So like years and years go by and I still, I don't know if it's just me being a psychopath, but in the back of my head, I'm like, hey man, maybe I could still sign. Like I could still throw 95, that was always my dream, pitch professionally. And then it kind of got to the point where I kind of saw the writing on the wall. I was like, hey, if I want to sign as a 27-year-old, I'm going to have to throw in really hard with no professional innings under my belt. So it eventually just turned into a better opportunity for me to learn. Like I'm a very hands-on learner. I don't like to just sit there and, read about things for hours. I like to say, like, I sprint when I read. So, like, I'll read, five chapters of a book, and then I'll put it down. I won't open it for another month. But, like, what I do love to do is bug the crap out of my really smart friends like Rob and Sammy and be like, hey, man, here's this video. What can I do to get better? And then, like, I will just go do that myself. So it helps me learn a ton about pitching just doing it myself. So I kind of set up my training the same way I train my own players. And I'll typically phase myself about 1 month in advance. So, like, we ended the season this year. I took 2 weeks off and drove out to Arizona. And then right when I got here, I started my on-ramp throwing phase. I wrote out my own lifting phase just like I was going to do for my players. I did that block. And then at the end of that block, I would kind of sit down and reassess it. Like, what went really well? What could I have done better? And then I'll give that same exact block edited to the players. So I was kind of like one step ahead of them. And like, I love to train. I love to throw. And I love to lift weights. So it works out really well. The players love it. They seem to be a little more bought in seeing me do some crazy stuff out there. But I love the training side of it. And if for whatever reason I pull a 100 out of me at some point, that'd be awesome. But I just love the learning experience that I'm getting from actually going out and doing it myself. I think it's just a unmatched sense of like, how does this program feel while I'm doing it? Because I think a lot of strength coaches will write a program and then the guy's like, hey man, my back hurts, and he's like, you're soft. And it's like, well, no, like you're doing it, like you're lifting, but you're not on your feet in cleats all day, shagging BP for an hour and then throwing 85 pitches at 100 miles an hour. Like, you don't know how that feels until you go do it. So I think that experience of like doing my first velo day and remembering how tight my arm was the next day, but it's like, it's fine. You know, it loosens up. This is what it's like. And I'm going to adapt to that. And then by, you know, week three or four, I felt great, you know, and I'm seeing that velo bump. And it's just a constant reminder for me of like what these athletes are actually going through on a day-to-day basis, instead of just having this thought in my head of what I felt like, you know, 6, 7 years ago when I was playing in college.
Yeah, when I was in grad school, I would do the strength training program for my baseball team like weeks in advance and really just use myself as my own guinea pig. But that was only the lifting side, right? And that was off-season lifting. And I've always like thought about doing a throwing program or like a bat speed program in the off-season and just seeing how it feels. And it, to me, it just makes too much sense. And it's not that we're going to just magically become pro players. You might, I have no chance, you know what I mean? But like, if I can do this program and not get hurt and add velocity, you know, or I can increase my exit velocity, like it's probably going to work for somebody who's actually skilled at the game. And I mean, I played really like low level college baseball. I understand the game. Like I watch the game. I know what's going on. I talk with our hitting coaches, our pitching coaches, but you know, I understand and I empathize with how difficult 162 games in 180 days is and how much time on their feet they have. And I think that's really helped me with my conversations with players is I try not to pull that, oh, you're soft card. Like if a guy's back hurts, because you know, if a guy wants to cut a lift that day, like, I don't think he's being soft. I think he's like really beat up. And the thing is, there's a lot of people that are like, oh, I would play that sport, you know, for free. Like, oh, they make a ton of money. I would play for free. And I'm like, I'm telling you, you would not. You would not. And even if you did, you would break, because you work a 9-to-5 desk job and you need 2 days off every week because you're too tired from sitting at your desk. Imagine you're standing that whole day in the sun, you're walking around, you're running, you're hitting, you're throwing, and you don't get those days off. Like if you can only go 5 days of work and you need a day off, 2 days off over the weekend. And again, I'm not saying this is right or wrong, right? Like this is just the reality of the game. We had one stretch where we played like 30 games in 31 days. And the only day off we had, we traveled. And then we had one day off and then we played like 10 more. We had like 40 out of 42, something absolutely outrageous. I don't remember the exact number, but it's like that is so demanding even on a support staff member. And we're not even playing in the game. Like when I was early on in the minor leagues, even like I would never sit in the dugout. I would always stand just to see how tired my legs would be. And then the next day, like see what my training looked like and like, just try to find a way to just like feel not to the level that they're feeling. Cause we're never going to feel that unless we actually play the game, but like just something to add some accumulated fatigue and then try to convince myself mentally and physically to train and to train at a high enough level that adaptations are actually happening. I'm not just checking a training box, and it's really, really hard. And so I give a ton of kudos to you for, you know, one, pursuing it, and two, like staying committed to it. And now I am very curious, because all the stuff I've seen you do, how much of that, like you said, you're editing the program to your players, like how much of that is making its way into the program in terms of like the Zercher squatting and the javelin throwing and the weighted balls and like the moving your spine with weight, like to preset this, I love all of it. I actually really enjoy like just watching your videos and stuff from afar, because I'm like, this is like legit training. This is taking the training wheels off and like really pushing the limit of performance training. So I want to know like, how much of that is making it into the program? How much of that is for your own, like just to see how far you can go before, like, you know, because the thing is like, if you get hurt, it sucks, but it's not the end of the world. If they get hurt doing something, like it's a little different. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And just adding that, like, even though I am throwing, like the demands of their throwing, and obviously with my guys being in rehab, like I'm for the most part fully healthy. Like I got my aches and my pains, and I've dealt with stuff, but like they're in rehab for a reason. So, you know, I can't have all of them doing some of the stuff I'm doing, but I would say for a large part, like the training I have those guys doing is very, very similar to the training I'm doing myself. And that's more, I would say, myself doing the athletes training than like the athletes just doing the old meathead strength coaches program. But I, you know, one of my athletes, you know, he worked up to a 365 Zercher squat for three. He's a little farther along in his throwing program and he's unrestricted in the weight room. But, you know, I got him Zercher and heavy. Some guys don't like it, so I don't force it on everyone. So I'm just going to, you know, load them similarly with another implement that they enjoy, you know, and they can actually like try really hard at. You know, like the Jefferson curl, that was like 5 years in the making. You know, I started doing them about 5 years ago. And then I remember me and Rob at Driveline, we were sitting there and we were going to have a race to who could Jefferson curl their body weight faster. And that was just probably not something I would do to my athletes. Like, hey, man, let's see how fast you get to a body weight Zercher squat. But that's like the fun I have with it, where, like you said, if I end up getting hurt, then, you know, I'm hurt for a few months, but it doesn't really matter. If one of the athletes gets hurt doing something like that, it's a much different story. So just kind of like keeping that in mind while I'm giving it to them and making sure that, like, hey, that's why I do it a month in advance. It's like, hey, this really beat me up. This is not going to be good. So I'm going to can that and replace it with this. And, you know, but this actually felt really good and I didn't think it would. So I'm going to dose a little more of that in there.
Yeah. There, like I said, when I was in grad school, I was doing our program and there was a 2 or 3 week block that I had in there that was specifically meant to like really suck. And I went through it, I did it, and I warned them all ahead of time, like, listen, for the next 2 to 3 weeks, like, you're going to be miserable. If you have a significant other, let them know. It's the training, it's not them, it's not you.
Yeah.
If your parents are wondering why you're feeling weird, it's the train. Like, you are going to be exposed to some really painful, difficult training. We have to get through this to get to the next block. And we did, and everybody went through it. And I'm sure for you, it's probably similar in the sense of like, you know, yes, it beat me up, but like, this is too much, or like, okay, it's going to beat me up. But also at the same time, like, we probably need this level of training in this certain period of time. And that can help you with, you know, the athletes really buying into what you're doing. Like, if they know you're fully invested in the process as much as they are, like, they'll probably follow you anywhere you lead them. Like, you lead them into a fire, they'll be like, this guy, like, we trust him. He's already been in that fire once. Like, he came out, look at, he's fine. Like, we'll go in there with him.
Yeah. And that's been the biggest thing too, is just understanding that like some of the soreness and the discomfort is normal. And like, I feel like if I, you know, wasn't doing some of that stuff and I had an athlete come up and be like, hey man, you know, like, this is really uncomfortable, I'd be like, oh, let's switch it. Instead of like, no, like, this is supposed to feel this way. Like, at this stage in your RTP, like, it's fine to feel uncomfortable. It's fine to feel sore. Like, some of that we want, especially early on in that process. So I think just giving me the context and that experience of like, no, this is supposed to be this way, or it's not supposed to be this way.
Yeah. The mental side, I mean, I know we hit on it with the rehab when we were talking earlier, but there is like a very real mental barrier to pain and to pushing through, and especially when you're coming back from injury. It's something that I've seen, you know, really guys struggle with, in the sense of like, let's say they have an ACL, you know, there's nothing on the imaging, they're fully healthy, they should be, you know, full go, but they're apprehensive to push. Or like a guy is very far out of Tommy John, his imaging's clean, and he picks up the ball and like, he always gets to a certain point in his throwing and it's like, just doesn't feel right. It just doesn't feel right. And there's something to be said of like being in pain, but not having that pain be dangerous, or being discomfort and not being dangerous. And I think you're hitting the nail on the head there of like you said, my arm is really tight after a velo day, but I'm okay. It's going to be okay. Where I think some guys feel that and they panic, and it just creates this, you know, really bad cycle that is hard to break. And I think that's why that mental health professional comes in there. And for you, like, being able to have done the training and kind of give them a heads up ahead of time, that this might suck, but it's going to be okay. And, you know, either one, they're going to listen and they're going to be okay. Or the other side of it is like, hey, you said this was going to suck, but actually it wasn't that bad. Like, maybe we can take it up a notch. And then, like,
yeah,
you know, that's a further point in their rehab that you can kind of help them with. So it's really cool that you're doing all of that, man. And I really hope you pull 100 sometime. And I would love to see it. Is there any one thing that you think is directly relating to your velo the most, whether it's in the weight room or with the weighted balls or something mechanically you're doing on the mound? Or is it kind of just like the holistic aspect of all of it coming together, you know, kind of like a fine symphony, so to speak?
Yeah, I think it's been everything coming through. And, you know, I've battled, you know, on and off arm pain since college, like even back to high school, I can remember. And I recently found out maybe about a year ago is like a very mild case of TOS. So that's been something I've been battling that whole time. And it's just kind of been, you know, doing more research, figuring that out, both, you know, bugging the medical department, just doing research on how I could help fix that without surgery, because it only hurts if I throw, and if I throw hard. So I was like, all right, you know, I'm not a player. I can play catch with my son when I have a son in the future. Like, I'm not going to get a surgery just to have a surgery so I can throw hard for fun. So I wanted to see what I could do to get around that. So, you know, just throughout the years, just trying to figure out different ways I could lift my upper body in the weight room without any pain, different, you know, arm slots or arm angles, different changing my arm action. Like I've really remapped my arm action. It used to be really stabby and kind of like wrap around me. And I've just tried to do a lot more athletic throws. Like, I used to play shortstop in high school. I went to college the two-way. So just getting back to like my roots is like being a little more athletic, taking some of the structure out of my like weight room routine. And now that I'm not like training to play professional baseball anymore, I'm just training to like have fun and be a good athlete. You know, I don't have that sense of, oh, I need to do my 15 minutes of foam rolling and my 15 minutes of breathing exercises before I touch this weight. And then boom, I touch this weight and I'm fine and I don't get hurt. And then I'm like, oh, like maybe all that stuff was kind of a waste of time. So it's just kind of like reevaluating everything without that lens of like, oh, I need to do all these specific things because I want to go play professional baseball. And it was just kind of like a big weight off my shoulders once I kind of made the decision like, hey, I'm not doing that. And I was like, I'm just going to do this for the heck of it because it's fun and I want to do it. And I think that's when like I took, you know, my mind just opened up and it was easy. Like, okay, you know, now I'm moving better than I've ever moved in on the mount. Like I'm lifting more weight than I've ever lifted in the weight room because I'm not just stuck to these very, very specific principles.
Yeah. My brother plays college ball now, and I had my dad send me a video of him hitting. Actually, yesterday we were just FaceTiming about it. And I was like, he just looks so uncomfortable and unathletic in the box. Like, and he was a quarterback in high school. He's a catcher. Like, he's a very athletic kid. You know what I mean? He played basketball growing up. Like, he'd always play in the yard with us. And I called him and I was like, he just looks so robotic. Like, just go be an athlete. You know how to hit. You know how to be an athlete. Like, go up there and just, you know, just be athletic in the box and just, you know, try to hit something hard. Like, you look like you're forcing it right now. And, you know, part of it is the mental side of like, he's with a new team. He's trying to perform. He's trying to, you know, show out a little bit. And he's just, you know, he's nervous. It's performance anxiety, totally normal. But it just seems like I said earlier, there are certain aspects of the game where guys are just becoming so robotic. And it's like you said, I have to do this to do be ready to throw. I have to do that to be ready to throw. If I don't do X, I can't do Y, and then I can't be Z. And it's like, I don't know, sometimes you just got to go be an athlete and just have a little fun with it. And I used to be the same way. I used to be very regimented with my training. And now I'm like, you know, as long as I can deadlift 500 pounds, if like one of my side missions in life is to deadlift 500 pounds in every major league stadium. And like, as long as I can pull 500, like all of my other training is whatever I want to explore. So if I want to explore movement mechanics, if I want to explore with water bags or 3D straps or weighted balls or, you know, Zercher squats or what, I can do whatever I want in my training and test it out. And it's like, I feel the same way that you're talking about. It's like a weight off of my shoulders of like training went from something I had to do to like something I just get to do and I get to have fun with. And like, yesterday I was out shooting hoops, and like I'm terrible at basketball, but it became a conditioning session for me because I was just constantly chasing the ball around. Like there's just different ways to like maintain your athleticism. And I think as you get older, like, you know, that's the first thing you lose is just that quickness. And then when guys like, man, I used to be able to do this, I used to be able to do that. And it's like, well, you probably can't do that anymore because you don't do that anymore. Like you don't play pickup basketball with your friends. You don't throw the football around in the yard. You don't play kickball in the summer. Like, you know what I mean? It's just like, I think that's a major part that's missing in training is just having fun, being athletic, and like, you know, letting yourself show out a little bit. And I don't know. It's just like, I don't know if a lot of training is really good right now. There's a lot of really good things, but there's also a lot of like robotic things. And it goes way, way back to the beginning of this conversation of like, what is superstition versus what is like actual preparation and routine. And like some of the stuff guys do to get ready is just, to me, straight superstition. Like you can go out and pick the ball up and throw, like you'll be okay. Even if you just do that once a month where you just throw your rhythm off, throw your routine off, like, cause you know how it is in the minor leagues, you may have a 10:30 kids game and it's like, are you going to do your 4 hour prep routine from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. to get ready to maybe throw an inning in the game? Or are you just going to show up, play catch after a quick stretch and go? Like sometimes you have to be able to do that. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but that's just kind of where my head is at with things right now.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, that's, we tell the guys all the time, like the training should be fun. Like it is a fun experience to come into the weight room and like do some of the things, you know, like instead of just jumping on a box, like take a tennis ball and go do a 360 dunk on the basketball hoop outside, you know, like put something really high in the air and have a competition with your friends to jump up and try and touch it. And I feel like that's something, at least personally, when I was training to play professionally in college, like that's not something I would have done because that was outside of the program that I had written. And it wasn't in there that said 360 windmill dunk on basketball hoop. It said box jump, you know, 4x2. So I had to do that box jump 4x2. And if I didn't do that, and then, okay, I didn't throw hard the next start, it was like, okay, it was because I didn't do those box jumps. And it's like, no, you know, I'm just not a good athlete. Like there's other stuff wrong here.
Yeah, honestly, if you would have got rid of the box jumps and tried to windmill dunk, you probably would have thrown harder.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you believe makes a strength and conditioning coach successful? Maybe like in general, and then specifically like in a rehab setting, working with, you know, injured athletes that are trying to come back and play.
Yeah. So I think, just ditching the coach's own bias and just making sure that like what you're doing is going to help that athlete get back on the field, but also be very successful. So I think like, especially in the rehab setting, I think a lot of strength coaches are content with getting that player back to being healthy, and he gets his MMI and he's cleared. Okay, I did a good job. But that player is throwing 5 miles an hour less than he's ever thrown in his career, and he's getting bombs hit off him left and right. And it's like, well, he's healthy now, but he's also worse. So like a big thing we preach with our rehab department is like return to peak performance. So like, we don't just want to return them to performance. We want them to return to the best they have ever been, if not better. And I think like a strength coach who can set their own bias and their own like different KPIs aside, just to make sure that that athlete is going to be the most well prepared they can be to play their sport, I think that's a successful coach. And like obviously the KPIs matter. Like I want my athletes to, you know, have a higher jump height on the force plates, have a higher peak power on the force plates, but I would rather my athletes get better on the field and those numbers just increase very marginally than, you know, I'm setting records and I'm, you know, adding 100 pounds on a guy's back squat, but he goes out there and he's throwing slower. So I think a successful coach is just someone who takes that all into mind and into account when kind of evaluating a player plan.
I love that, man. I really do. I think there's so many times that in a rehab process, you look at somebody's baseline numbers, you know, baseline numbers, and then you're like, ah, well, you know, he's back to his old Nordboard score, so he's good to go. And it's like, well, that's also the score he had when he got hurt. So like, maybe it needs to actually be higher than that. Like, why can't we work on, you know, upper body strength while he's dealing with a lower body injury? So, you know what I mean? Like there's so many opportunities in rehab to focus on areas of improvement that I would agree with you. I think you have to come out of rehab better than you have before. And I think there's so much opportunity to do that. And I would agree with you completely. I've seen, I've heard, it's just like, yeah, we got him back on the field, so it's good. And it's like, well, you know, is it good really? Like, is he actually hurting the team by being on the field playing at this, you know, level versus taking that one extra week to really tune him up so that when he does come back, he's ready to rock? And, you know, it's probably a tale as old as time in rehab of like, you say 4 to 6 weeks and front office wants him back in 4 weeks, but you think 6 weeks, and then it takes 5 weeks and they're like, why didn't it? You know what I mean? Like, it's that back and forth of like, we want him on the field, speed the process up, but also like, hey, we could probably get this guy to a new level if we just give him an extra week. And it's like, oh, we don't have a week. And it's like, okay, like, you're kind of playing with fire here. So that's a cool, you know, cool little thing you guys have, return to peak performance versus just return to play. I think that's probably a model that should be kind of the norm, especially in professional sports with, you know, the assets and the resources and just, you know, how high the stakes are. But, and the other point that you're making about, you know, force plates versus on field, I think baseball is so data driven that it's like, oh yeah, force plates. But like, he has to have gotten better on the field because his force plates got better. And it's like, no, just watch the game. Like, did he get better? Objectively, is he moving better on the mound? Is he throwing harder? Is he striking people out? Is he, you know, inducing weak contact? Like, I really do, going back to our, you know, talk about screening earlier, like, I think the game is the ultimate screen, and everything else is secondary to that. And I don't know if that's the consensus in the game right now, if I'm being completely honest with you. And maybe it is that way over there, maybe it's not, but that's just in my mind, that's always made the most sense, is like, is he playing well or not? Is he healthy or not? Like, how do we keep him at that level, or how do we bring him back to that level or better if he's hurt?
Yeah. And like, trust me, I worked at Driveline. I, you know, loved Driveline when I was an athlete. I love the force plates. I love all the data. But I've also seen the other side of that, where there's guys who get way too invested in like, oh, I can pull down this velo, and then they get on the mound and they throw 8 straight fastballs off the backstop. And it's like, you can't hold a runner, you know, you don't know how to change up your looks, you're tipping all your pitches. And I just think there's way more to that than just like the X's and O's of like, okay, he hit this benchmark on velo, he's good to go, he's back.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, man. And it's refreshing to hear that from you. Do you have any advice for others, either, you know, young coaches that may be looking to get into the field, or coaches specifically looking to try to get to rehab, or, you know, just the older coaches that are listening that just want to stay on top of things?
I would say just, you know, be yourself and find a good mentor. You know, I was lucky. I met a guy by the name of John Crimmins when I was at Kaiser University. He was actually a nutrition professor, and he was just absolutely jacked. And I didn't even have that class, but I peeked my head in the window and I saw him, and I was like, I got to talk to that guy. I got to see what he's up to. And I just started visiting his office, and I didn't even take any of his classes until like my second year at the school, but we ended up talking a lot. And I mean, he was just incremental in helping me get to, you know, like, always question everything. You know, and push me to where I'm at now. And I think just the part about being yourself, like, I think for a long time, I just tried so hard to please others with what I was saying or what I was posting on social media. Like, I was just trying to look so good and impress other coaches instead of like literally just speaking what's on my mind. So like, now when I make an Instagram post, like, I'll be on a walk with my wife and I'll like think of something and I'll stop for 5 minutes and like type in my notes. And like, that's how I type out all my posts. And she laughs at me all the time that I just kind of like shroom brain them up. But I'll just be sitting there. I'll think of something. I'll type it out real quick and I'll post it. When in like years past, I would spend an hour trying to type something out and think, oh, what is, you know, going to impress this guy that I look up to, instead of just posting whatever was on my mind. Like, obviously not just posting nonsense, but, you know, just being myself and speaking how I want.
Hey, man, if you've zert your squat 405 for reps, you can say whatever you want.
Yeah.
I have a 500-pound searcher in my back pocket that I can play when people want to say stupid things. And that doesn't discredit me from saying stupid things. But yeah, I understand completely, man. It's very much how I view social media and how I just think it's not it's not super authentic. And I think the people that are authentic on there, I tend to gravitate towards. That's why I like watching your videos. And honestly, I enjoy seeing like the process that you're going through and like that you're documenting it. So it's cool to see it. It really is. And the fact that you're able to do it within the professional baseball setting where there's probably a lot of stigmas and like old beliefs and like, oh, this is how we've always done it types. And you're just kind of like, nah, this is me. This is what I do. This is what I believe. Like, this is who I am. Like, for me, I think that's really cool that you can just be yourself, be authentic. And it's exhausting to not be yourself. It really, really is.
Yeah.
It's really exhausting.
Yeah, it is.
So where are you going for continuing ed? Are there any books you'd recommend, podcasts you listen to, seminars that you go to? Like, where are you going to stay on top of things?
Yeah, so especially in the rehab field, I haven't actually been to one of his seminars, but David Gray, he has a great interactive website that I've subscribed to the last 2 years now. So I think he's got, it's like 250 hours worth of content on there at a certain time. I might be way off on that number, but I want to say that's what it is. And then he also uploads videos monthly. It's just great stuff in terms of the rehab field. So he's over in Ireland and is also a rehab professional there. So I'll watch all of his videos. Podcast-wise, I'll listen to David's podcast as well. I love listening to Jake Tura's podcast. This is the Jacked Athlete podcast. He's got some great guests on there. Joel Smith's Just Fly. I love that podcast. He always has awesome guests on there, and just a great way to learn about different fields too, because he has a lot of track and field, football, basketball. So just getting out of like the baseball mindset of strength and conditioning there. Book wise, I would say probably my favorite one is, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, it's called The Inner Game of Tennis. I might be butchering this gentleman's name, but it's Timothy Galway. I want to say it was written back in the 70s, and then got a recent edit, and was kind of republished. But it's a tennis instructor who kind of talks about a self one and a self two. And like one of the, I give this to all the rehab guys to read, even all the guys in AA this year, I tell them to read it. It's just a very unique perspective on, you know, kind of viewing your own success. And he's like taking the emotions out of the performance you have on the field. So he talks about like, okay, you're on the mound and you just sail one way over the hitter's head. Like you're pissed. The hitter's happy because you threw a ball and the umpire just saw you throw a ball. He just called a ball. He had no emotions tied to it. And it's like, be more like the umpire. Like, don't be mad. Don't be happy. Just see what happened. And then, okay, next pitch. So I would say Inner Game of Tennis, definitely on the book section there, is by far my favorite.
Yeah, I'll have to check that one out. I actually haven't read that one, but it does sound very interesting. Okay, I want to finish with a lightning round and then I'll get you out of here. I know it's spring training, you probably need your sleep.
Good.
Four questions, as long or short answers, and then I promise I'll get you out of here. Cool with that?
Yeah.
All right, first one, who is your biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning?
So I would say, I mentioned him already, but John Crimmins, he was my mentor at Kaiser, and I still probably text him about once a week. I sent him that Zercher squat video the other day and he was all fired up to see. I probably couldn't even back squat 225 when I was back there with him. So it's been great to see. But he definitely opened my eyes to the field of strength and conditioning. It was actually funny, when I was in college, I was going to be a chiropractor. And he kept nagging me to get in an exercise science field. He's like, man, you make a great strike coach. And then he always wanted to get me into the exercise science field. And then when I graduated, they actually put the wrong major on my diploma. And it was supposed to be a double major in health science and psychology. And they ended up writing exercise science and psychology. So we had a big laugh about that. And it's funny the way everything panned out now that I'm in strength and conditioning and not a chiropractor. So
one piece of equipment to train with, what would it be?
Ooh, so I actually had an athlete ask me this the other day. So when I'm thinking of this, I'm in just an open field with nothing around. So I would pick a wall. So like a concrete wall or something. It sounds crazy, but I love plyometrics. I love sprinting. So for the lower body, you have your open field for that. And then you have the wall for overcoming isometrics. You could train running mechanics. You could do mobility on the wall. And then you could, you know, like I said, overcoming isometrics, you could run up it, jump for height, run off it, do a 360, get some landing mechanics. So I would say a wall.
Biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
I'll go professionally. In the 2020-2021 offseason at Driveline, I got the opportunity to work with Shohei Ohtani. So I didn't get to work with him one-on-one there. You know, my colleague with the Cubs now, actually Stephen Simmons, he was writing most of his programming. But just getting the opportunity to write the few bits of his programming that I did and just see him train on a day-to-day basis was an unreal experience. I mean, the work that he puts in is unmatched compared to some of the athletes I've seen. And I mean, just the dedication that he has to his craft. I mean, he was in there for 6 hours a day between his hitting, his strength and conditioning, getting his meals right, you know, the pitching side of everything. It was awesome.
Last one, any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
I always wanted to get into the law enforcement field, actually. That's what my father was. So I grew up idolizing him. You know, he's probably my biggest inspiration. So somewhere in the law enforcement field to some degree. I'm not exactly sure I'd want to be a, you know, like a patrol cop or something like that. But I love that field. It's definitely interesting to me.
Connor, it's been good to get to know you, man. And I'm really excited for any future conversations that we have. If the listeners want to get in touch with you, where can we go? Is social media the best place or is there a better spot?
Yeah, so my Instagram is just at Rooney Performance, R-O-O-N-E-Y. And then I am on Twitter. I don't use it as much, but it's just Connor Rooney 23.
Awesome. Connor, I appreciate it. Best of luck with everything. Hopefully, knock on wood, your season is not too busy this year for you. And we'll definitely be catching up again soon, man. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
All right, everybody, that's going to conclude part two of our two-part interview with Connor. I hope you enjoyed this one. If you haven't checked out part one, make sure to do so. It was very well received, and I've gotten a lot of good feedback on it. Three things that I took from Connor in this episode: don't be afraid to test new exercises out on yourself before prescribing them to your athletes. Having a routine is important, but being able to adapt the plan and deviate when necessary is also valuable. And be yourself and find a good mentor. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.